Hello, and thank you for tuning into the Chiropractic Research Podcast Series. My name is Dr. Dean Smith, and I'll be your host for this interview. Just a brief background about myself. I'm a clinical faculty member in the Department of Kinesiology and Health at Miami University, and also maintain a private practice of chiropractic in Eaton, Ohio at Essence of Wellness Chiropractic Center. My goals for producing these research interviews are to get the word out about chiropractic research from the experts that are actually doing the research. Dissemination of research findings is an important part of the research process. Publicizing these interviews passes on the benefits of chiropractic research to other researchers, chiropractors in practice, as well as practitioners from other disciplines and the wider community. Another goal is to encourage collaboration of researchers to promote future high-quality chiropractic research. And lastly, to motivate and assist practitioners and students alike to pursue research careers in chiropractic science. I'd like to point out that Chiropractic Science has partnered with chirocredit.com to make these podcasts more interactive. Well, let's get started with today's show. Today, I'm extremely excited to interview Dr. Heidi Havoc. Dr. Havoc is a chiropractor and a neurophysiologist who has worked in the area of human neurophysiology for over 15 years. Heidi has a PhD in human neurophysiology from the University of Auckland. Her work has been instrumental in building the base of scientific evidence, demonstrating the efficacy of chiropractic care in improving people's health and well-being. As a researcher, she has investigated the effects of chiropractic adjustments of dysfunctional spinal segments, or subluxations, on somatosensory processing, sensory motor integration, and motor cortical output. Dr. Havoc is the director of research at the New Zealand College of Chiropractic, where she has established the Center for Chiropractic Research. Dr. Havoc is also an adjunct professor at the University of Ontario Institute of Technology in Oshawa, Canada, and is a member of the World Federation of Chiropractic Research Council. She has received numerous awards, research awards, and published a number of papers in chiropractic and neurophysiology journals. She's presented her work across the world and is also on the editorial board of the JMPT and the Journal of Chiropractic Education. She was named Chiropractor of the Year in 2007 by both New Zealand Chiropractic Association and the New Zealand College of Chiropractic Alumni Association. And she's also the author of a really cool textbook and website, HeidiHavoc.com. So the textbook is great. It's called The Reality Check. So check that out. And that describes in an easy-to-understand language what happens in the brain when a chiropractor adjusts dysfunctional segments of your spine. Dr. Havoc, thank you so much for being a part of this Chiropractic Science podcast.
Thanks. It's my pleasure.
Great. So can you tell me how you became interested in becoming a chiropractor in the first place?
Well, that's an easy one, really, because I'm a fourth-generation chiropractor. So my great-grandfather was one of the first 1,000 chiropractors to ever graduate from Palmer College in the United States. So, I mean, I grew up with my grandmother telling me stories about these, chiropractors and what we did. And she was such a healthy lady, and she always has put that down to a lifetime of chiropractic care.
That's great. Good stuff. So were there any personal experiences that you had, even though you had been adjusted since probably you were born, I imagine, were there any personal experiences that you thought, I'm really hung up on this stuff, I really want to do it?
Funnily enough, no.
Okay. No.
I mean, I grew up in Norway, and my grandmother was a New Zealander, and so my great grandfather was a New Zealander. My mother's a Kiwi and New Zealander. But I grew up in Norway. So I grew up in the medical world, medical model. My dad's a doctor, medical doctor, and my uncles and aunts in Norway were physiotherapists. So I only went to New Zealand as a 20-year-old back in 94. Literally just to explore the country. And then I found out about the school. My uncle and aunt in New Zealand were both chiropractors. And that was really the first time I was introduced to it. You know, I've always heard the stories, but I never really personally knew much about it.
Okay. Yeah. Wow, very cool. So after you went to chiropractic college, you pursued a PhD at the University of Auckland. So why did you want to become a researcher? What got you interested in that following chiropractic school?
One of my lecturers at chiropractic school was an amazing woman, Dr. Bernadette Murphy, and I believe you've interviewed her as well.
Yes, I have.
Well, she became my PhD supervisor. So she also taught science to us at the Chiropractic College in New Zealand. And I just thought she was just so amazing, so smart, so clever, such a wonderful human being. She cared about people. She was a mother, a chiropractor, scientist, teacher. And I literally just wanted to help her. So I continued, she encouraged me to continue doing research at Auckland University. I didn't think I was smart enough. Bernadette Murphy just kept encouraging me. And it just has blossomed into this career that I absolutely love and adore and so passionate about understanding how chiropractic works.
Well, thank you for doing what you do, because we most appreciate it. Do you still practice at all?
I did up until about 2 years ago. I still practice in a sense that I adjust the subjects for our experiments, but it's become so ridiculously busy.
Sure.
That,
Sure.
I keep my license up to date. I make sure I can, and I adjust subjects for studies, but I don't often see private patients.
Got it.
Yeah.
Well, I want to soon get into the meat of the interview and really start to explore your research. First, though, you've authored numerous publications in scientific journals such as Experimental Brain Research, Journal of Electromyography and Kinesiology, Journal of Neurophysiology. I've read, I think, most of them that are published.
Well done.
Yes. And they weren't easy to read.
No.
There's a lot of jargon that I wasn't quite familiar with, but I've been getting accustomed to. So.
Well, remember, I've spent 10 years studying this stuff full time.
So that's right. That's
no
right.
wonder,
That's right.
A chiropractor that's not also trained as a neuro or brain scientist.
Yeah, that's right.
No wonder you find it a little bit tricky.
Exactly. So I do, but it's exciting reading. So with your background in neurophysiology and chiropractic, do you feel there are any important concepts, hypotheses that can be answered with the neurophysiologic paradigm as it pertains to chiropractic?
Well, I do. In particular, the questions about the mechanisms. So how does an adjustment work? Which is different from clinical research where you're looking at the efficacy of a treatment for a certain condition, for example. The research that I've focused on with my neurophysiology background is trying to understand how our treatments work or how our adjustments work. So when we adjust these dysfunctional segments in the spine that chiropractors call subluxations, what does that do within the central nervous system to cause, these improvements in function, reduction in pain, improved quality of life? So that's a key area that neuroscience can help us.
That's great. And so one of the things that I get from reading your research, and we're actually right here at the just after the Ohio State Chiropractic Association meeting that you flew in from New Zealand for. So thank you again for coming here to Ohio and educating us. It's been a blast. And you've just gone through all this for us here in Ohio. But one of the main things that I got out of your talk today and that I've read from your research is that you're keenly interested in neuroplasticity and how we affect the brain with a chiropractic adjustment.
Yes.
I'd like to take some time to learn about how chiropractic affects the nervous system and the particular studies that you've done that have explored those mechanisms.
Yep.
So can we start first by perhaps defining what neuroplasticity is?
Right. Well, neuroplasticity is any change in the structure or function of the central nervous system in response to altered input. So as you get new sensory input coming in, your brain will adapt and change based on that input. And it does it all the time, 24/7. Your brain is constantly changing and adapting because of the new sensory information that's coming in.
Got it. So presumably there may be some information that is not going to be adaptive for our system, maybe maladaptive. And then
yes. What scientists refer to when we talk about maladaptive plastic changes is that there are some changes within the nervous system that we as individuals don't particularly like. So, for example, if you're in pain, we know that that is an adaptive process within the central nervous system, but we don't particularly like pain. So just to sort of differentiate, learning how to play the piano that we consider a good thing versus learning to dysfunction and be in pain, we consider that maladaptive versus adaptive plasticity.
Great. So presumably then, if those types of things are maladaptive, then the chiropractic adjustment seems to do something that can lead us away from the maladaptive and make us more adaptive.
Yes, there seems to be quite a lot of research findings now where that's exactly what we're finding, that we're actually almost reversing maladaptive findings. And it would be quite cool to look further down the line with clinical research to actually see, do we actually then therefore prevent problems from developing in the first place? Do we not only, you know, fix problems that are developing in a maladaptive way, but can we also prevent them from developing in the first place?
Yeah.
So can we nip problems in the bud early and then prevent, you know, a lifetime of chronic pain, for example? Once you've an established chronic pain condition, we know it's extremely difficult to treat that.
Sure.
But what I suspect with chiropractic care is that, you know, down the track we'll be able to show, I'm hoping, that we can actually prevent these problems from developing in the first place.
That's great.
By keeping the system in an adaptive neuroplastic fashion as opposed to developing these maladaptive processes.
Sure. Yeah. So that's great. So that means that, you know, we use pain as one example, but people don't have to have pain to benefit from this, do they?
No, they don't. And that's really interesting. Because I set out to actually understand the effects of adjusting a dysfunctional segment or a subluxation, I specifically didn't want to include patients that were in pain in our studies, because chiropractors are good at fixing pain. And if I was changing pain, that would also change a lot of these neurophysiological measures that I wanted to record. So I specifically chose people that had spinal problems but weren't experiencing pain, particularly on the day that we were measuring their brain function. And so we have shown, you know, over 15 years now that people that are not experiencing pain benefit quite significantly from being adjusted.
Excellent. Can we get into perhaps a few of the studies in just a little bit more detail as to what you've done and what you've shown for this neuroplastic change and how chiropractic affects the brain? And I'll just cue you with some of the studies, because I know you have a bunch. Recently, you published a paper in Experimental Brain Research showing that there are changes in what's called the H reflex and V waves following chiropractic adjustments. And the findings were that the adjustments appear to alter the net excitability of the low threshold motor units, increasing the cortical drive, or brain drive, I guess you could say, and then preventing fatigue. I see all of your studies as an important study, but this is particularly exciting to me. Can you give us some details about it in terms of the methods, what kind of things you did? And maybe we should just first quickly describe what the heck is an H reflex and a V wave anyhow.
Okay, the easiest way to understand the H reflex, have you ever had the, any chiropractor would understand the tendon tap experiment that we do where you stretch a muscle and it gets a reflexive response and it causes a contraction.
Sure, kind of like a knee-jerk response,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Go to the
but
physician.
We're doing it with an electrical stimulation of a nerve.
Okay.
You activate the 1A afferents, it excites the lower motor neurons, comes back out and contracts the muscle. So we can record that muscle contraction depending on the size of the electrical stimulation. We keep increasing the electrical stimulation. You get a larger and larger response in the muscle called the H reflex, until it plateaus out and then it decreases again and disappears. So we can measure that. It's a spinal cord reflex. But what's really fascinating is that the brain can actually also modulate the excitability of this spinal cord reflex. And the V wave is a really interesting reflex as well, but it actually measures the drive from the brain to the muscle.
Okay.
So it's kind of your brain's ability to drive that muscle. And we can again look pre and post adjusting subluxations whether we can alter this. But to do these recordings, you require the subjects or the participants to keep doing their maximum voluntary contractions. And so what was quite interesting with this study is we do two sessions, one session where we adjust them and one session where we just set them up. So we control for movement and touch and chatting to the chiropractor in time. And so when we were just, you know, doing that, just setting them up, chatting to them and measuring these things pre and post doing nothing to them really, they were getting fatigued. They were weaker maximum contractions, identical reflexes, identical V waves. Actually, no, the V waves were reducing, which match up with that they were getting fatigued.
Sure.
And that they had reduced strength.
Got it. Which is what you'd expect, right?
Which is what you'd expect.
In a typical situation.
Yeah. If you're sitting there doing maximum contractions over and over again, you fatigue.
You're going to get fatigued, yeah.
But what was really fascinating is when we did the adjustment session, not only was there no evidence of fatigue, they had increased their strength.
Wow.
By 16%. There was a very small change to the H reflex, but a 16% increase in strength and a 50% change in their V wave, their drive from their brain to that muscle. And so this was really fascinating, particularly when I was looking at the literature when I was writing the paper up to publish it.
Sure.
I came across a study that had been done looking at comparing 3 weeks of strength training to 3 weeks of endurance training. And I couldn't believe it, because our findings with a single session of chiropractic adjustments of subluxations had almost identical findings, neurophysiologically speaking, to 3 weeks of strength training.
Wow, that's great.
I mean, that's amazing.
And so myself, I teach in a kinesiology department, and so one of the things we tell our students is, look, during the first 4 to 5 weeks of strength training, what you're going to find is not a hypertrophy or a growth in the size
exactly.
of the muscle, but rather it's
neural
developing
changes.
Because of neural changes. So that just
that
perfectly
yeah.
explains the story here.
Well,
I think.
What's really fascinating is spinal function is changing the way the brain is driving a leg muscle. I mean, that's quite profound.
Yeah, that's
you know,
very profound.
It shows us that our the way our spines function is actually important for how the brain can control our muscles.
Yes, and it blends in very well with the literature that already has been done looking at strength changes following adjustments, but now it gives it a framework
for
how it happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That it's
amazing.
Not a reflexive thing, that this is a change
yeah.
in the brain's ability to drive that muscle.
Yeah. Fascinating. Yeah. Fascinating. Okay. So you've done many other studies, so I want to just talk about a few of them. Another one, you looked at alterations in cortical and cerebellar motor processing and subclinical neck pain patients following adjustments. Can you give us a recap on what that study is and what it means?
Well, this is really interesting too. Another thing that, you know, many chiropractic patients will come in and sort of explain clumsiness, sort of general clumsiness. They stub their toe, they knock their head, they put their glass down, they think they're putting it on the table, but they actually
sure.
it falls off the table and
sure.
smashes the floor. So there's
sure.
there's really only a couple of parts of the brain that would be heavily involved with that kind of fine-tuning of motor control.
Yeah.
We're not talking about direct strength now. We're talking about fine-tuning motor control. And the cerebellum is really heavily involved in that fine-tuning of motor control. Anybody would know, you know, if you knock your cerebellum out by drinking a little bit too much alcohol, that you'll fine-tune motor control.
I've never done that, Heidi, just to let you know.
No, me neither, obviously, never, ever, ever. So. But there might be people out there that
of course.
Know what I'm talking about. Anyway,
yeah.
So we wanted to look at, you know, because we've seen this clumsiness disappear when we adjust people's spines again. So we want to look at, well, do we alter this? So one cool method that you can use to actually stimulate the brain is called transcranial magnetic stimulation. So what we can do is we can send a high current through a coil, and it sets up a perpendicular magnetic field, and we can actually non-invasively activate the actual neural tissues of our brain. So I don't have to open up your skull and stick electrodes in, which is kind of cool. Most people
yeah,
appreciate
yeah,
that.
Yeah, right.
So so anyway, we stimulate over the cerebellum, and about 5 milliseconds later, we stimulate over the motor cortex, and then we record the signal at that motor cortex activation down to a muscle like a hand muscle. And what we do when we stimulate the cerebellum first is we inhibit the signal that gets sent for the motor cortex, because we know that the cerebellar activation of the motor cortex is an inhibitory one.
Right.
So this is normal physiology. So what we wanted to look at then, well, how about if we stimulate the cerebellum at increasing intensities, do we get more and more inhibition going down to the muscle? And in healthy people, that's what you find. But what was really interesting is we were comparing people that had ongoing, you know, mild chronic neck problems.
Right.
But they weren't in pain on the day again. Specifically, as I said before, we didn't want to have the pain as a confounding variable. So when you compare healthy people to neck pain people, they don't have this modulation of the cerebellum to their motor cortex.
Okay.
But when we adjusted these guys that had the spinal dysfunction, and we actually end up bringing back this increasing modulation from the cerebellum back to the motor control.
So it becomes more normalized,
yes,
looking more like
yes.
the normal controls.
Yes.
That's awesome.
So we thought that was extremely exciting.
Absolutely.
You know, getting again at the mechanisms of how chiropractic care makes people function better.
Sure,
yeah.
sure.
So it might be improving this communication between the cerebellum and motor cortex.
Which then, getting back to the behavioral aspects, people notice less clumsiness, more accuracy
yes.
in their movements,
yes.
better performance, better
yes.
strength,
yes,
better thinking.
Absolutely. Well, there actually is. I mean, we have done
proprioceptive
studies showing improved ability
sure.
to perceive where your arms and legs are in space. We've shown changes in mental rotation tasks. So people literally are able to process objects in space better once they've
right.
been adjusted. So,
right.
you know, it sounds like you're joking, but we're not.
Yeah. No, we're definitely
it's
not
amazing.
Joking here.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable stuff. When you look at the body of evidence that you've accumulated over the years, Are there any other things that, I'm sure there are lots of things that we could talk about, but how about some really important findings that you would emphasize to chiropractors and to their patients? How would you describe your own research over the years? What are some summary points, I guess, in other words?
Well, if I may, one thing that I think that our work is changing is our understanding of how adjusting a subluxation actually works. I know a lot of the old theories of how chiropractic worked was that, you know, spinal bones were out of place and that we, you know, adjust them back into place and take pressure off the nerve root.
Right.
Now, our research is kind of indicating that that's not the case. What our work is showing is that it's actually got a more profound effect than just relieving pressure on a single nerve root. And I think this is really, really important, not just to the chiropractors, but to the population in general, that the effect chiropractors seem to have when they adjust dysfunctional segments in the spine is we improve your brain's ability to perceive what's going on in your body, your environment around you, and therefore respond more appropriately to all the information that the brain receives and therefore can control your body better. And that's quite a profound shift from our old theories of how
sure.
we used to think
sure.
it worked.
Sure.
Yeah.
Or even how patients or other people view what chiropractors do as just
yeah.
back pain specialists or
yeah.
just treating neck pain. It really makes quite a different statement.
Well, it does. It seems to indicate that we change far more than just relieving some pinched nerves.
Yeah.
That we
yeah.
profoundly change the way the brain functions.
Yeah. And I think some special populations certainly have figured this out. Athletes, for example.
Yep.
They know.
Yep.
They know what we do improves their performance.
Yep.
And they want a piece of it.
Yep.
They just want to maximally perform. And
well, it's causing a whole lot of new avenues for us to research as well.
Right.
I mean, if we now know that we change prefrontal cortex, we've also shown that we change the brain's ability to filter afferent information that it receives.
Right.
This opens up avenues to look at, like, children with autism, children with ADHD. Children with ADHD often have prefrontal cortex problems. We've mm-hmm. shown 50% changes in prefrontal cortex changes in adults with, again, adjusting the spine.
Yeah.
You know, so it's opening up avenues that we
yeah.
might not have thought about
yeah.
that chiropractic could have a significant
That's
impact
totally amazing.
On and help people.
Totally amazing. And, you know, getting back to my work in exercise, one of the things we're finding out, for example, is exercise has, and you mentioned this before, has a similar effect on the prefrontal cortex,
yeah.
for instance. And even after a half an hour session of 60% of someone's VO2 max, we can show that there's a profound effect in terms of their movement time, reaction times,
yep.
cognitive manipulation of objects,
yep.
et cetera. And so what's exciting to me is that we're finding this in chiropractic, and then what if we merge some of these things together?
I know.
Isn't that
gets
that's
me
wild,
really
right?
exciting,
yeah.
excited as well. And I think that's where the future lies, to really get people well and to stay well, is to combine a lot of these things. That chiropractic shouldn't be something that people have on their own. Medicine shouldn't be something that people, you know, seek on its own. That there is a lot, you know, you can exercise, you can have good nutrition, you can get chiropractic care regularly. That these things combined probably have a far more profound effect.
Yeah.
And we're even starting to look at some of these studies where we're combining exercises with chiropractic.
That's great.
Yeah, preliminary findings so far, so I can't go and...
Got it.
I can't tell you about it yet.
Well, that's okay.
We'll next time.
We'll absolutely have another time if you're agreeable to that. I'd love to have you back on. Now, you've done work with somatosensory evoked potentials as well. We haven't really talked a whole lot about that. Can you tell us what the, maybe pick one or two studies and tell us what those kinds of studies are showing us, specifically in terms of the mechanisms? We talked about transcranial
yep.
magnetic stim, for example,
yep.
and the descending input. But what about the information that's coming from the body and going up to the brain?
Yeah, well, this is you know, really exciting stuff. I started out in early in my PhD looking at somatosensory evoked potentials. What we're really doing there is we're stimulating a mixed nerve at the wrist, and we are recording how the brain processes that information at various sort of relay stations on the way up to the cortex, and how it's then thinking about that information and sort of responding to it, or what scientists call sensory motor integration. The source taking that sensory information and determining what am I going to do with it. And so what we've been able to show repeatedly is that we change this cortical peak called the N30 somatosensory evoked potential peak. And this peak is known to be highly involved in early somatosensory evoked an early sensory motor integration. And so, and this is what I was getting at with the prefrontal cortex, because we followed it up, after I've repeated it three times. We've just recently reproduced the same study again using whole head EEG, and they've been able to calculate from that exactly where in the brain the changes are taking place.
Wow.
And this is where it's really, really exciting, because they've shown that there's a 50% reduction in activity in the prefrontal cortex. And that prefrontal cortex, so again, we're showing that adjusting the spine, adjusting dysfunctional segments of the spine, has this major impact on prefrontal cortex function. And this gets really interesting, because the prefrontal cortex is like the cerebellum. It's heavily involved in all aspects of, it's like one of your key controllers in your brain. It's where you ignore all the irrelevant sensory information that you don't need for the task at hand. It's where you focus your attention. It's where you concoct your little subgroups of things you need to do and switch between the different tasks.
Mm-hmm.
So it's called your executive functions. So this is an area that I'm extremely excited about following up to look at, more at what this means for us. But it's very exciting. We've also, in this same line of research, shown that the brain becomes more accurately aware of where your arms and legs are in space. So this, again, has big implications for people with the clumsiness. For the elderly population, we've even shown that we improve their ankle joint position sense.
Sure.
That becomes very important for falls risk.
Concussions, yeah. I imagine.
Well, concussions, yeah. Well, being able to think and focus again.
That's a prefrontal cortex. Got to be a negative plastic response.
Yeah, it has to be a maladaptive. So there's quite a few sports in America that end up
that's
with
right.
quite a few concussions.
I suspect so.
I see many, many subjects there I can explore
right.
future well, studies.
Maybe we can tap into that population.
Sounds good to me.
As well. So if you were to explain how a chiropractic adjustment works, how would you explain that to, I don't know if we should describe to to another professional, like a neurophysiologist. Maybe we can do that to a neurophysiologist and then to a patient.
In that case, I would first describe what a subluxation is.
Yep, perfect.
Chiropractors for over 120 years, we don't randomly manipulate the spine. We check the spine for areas that aren't functioning properly. They're often tended to the touch. We can reasonably reliably identify these dysfunctional segments based on that tenderness to touch and their changes in range of motion. They often have joint feel changes again that we can palpate. So from a neurophysiological perspective, based on all the work I've been doing for the last 15 years in neuroscience research, I would describe these segments as central segmental motor control problems. So the central nervous system isn't actually controlling the movement pattern of that spinal segment appropriately. And then I would explain that when we adjust these segments, when we apply our spinal manipulation to a dysfunctional area, that's what chiropractors call an adjustment. The theory then goes is that we are almost resetting that segment. It's almost like a stretch reflex of all the little paraspinal tissues,
uh-huh.
and we restore appropriate movement. And what we think this is, because neuroscientists also know that these small paraspinal muscles, they have much higher density of the muscle stretch receptors. So restoring proper movement will restore a feedback of information back to the brain. So a lot of scientists, not even just chiropractors, but a lot of other neuroscientists, actually think that these little paraspinal muscles, they're like the eyes in the spine. They're your brain's way of knowing what's going on in the spine. And this information seems to be very important for how the brain then perceives what's going on in the rest of the body, how it integrates other sensory information, and how it controls the body. And we believe it's because of the reestablishing this communication between the spine and the brain. And it might be because it represents the core of the body, that the brain always needs to be making decisions what it's doing based on where it is. So it's
right.
using that core paraspinal information.
Right.
And if you've got stuck segments that aren't moving, well, obviously they're not stretching the paraspinal muscle. They're not going to be feeding the brain with information. So then the brain kind of has to go on autopilot and kind of guess what's going on.
Right.
And I think we literally restore communication between the brain and the spine, and that this seems to have a profound effect on how the brain perceives what's going on in the rest of the body, integrates sensory information, and therefore can control the body more appropriately and accurately.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Now, how can we tell this simply to a patient then?
Well, to the public, I generally talk about a subluxation is a bit like a fuse blowing in the spine. so that there's a part of the body then that the brain can't see. So it makes it up.
Uh-huh.
And most of the time it will function okay. You might just notice little blips in your system that you're a little bit clumsy or your golf swing's out or,
right.
you know. But these things over time can accumulate. So if you've got faulty motor control because of, you know, spinal dysfunction, that therefore the brain's not communicating accurately to the knee anymore and it's sending different muscles to your – different messages to your thigh muscles so that it's now operating in a way that's less than ideal, well, over time, you can start to develop problems. And this is why we think that the spinal function can impact other conditions and the development of pain and problems.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
So when we adjust this – we restore appropriate communication. It's like we switch the lights back on so the brain can accurately see what's going on in the body and the world around you and therefore respond more appropriately. And
sure.
all of a sudden, all these little, you know, problems seem to disappear.
Yeah, so that perfectly explains how somebody could come in for, let's say, low back pain and they get adjusted and the headaches that they've had for years or...
That they may not even have told you about.
Of course.
They start disappearing.
Of course, yeah. So... patients do that all the time. You know, they don't write down a lot of the symptoms sometimes that they may have because they figure it has nothing to do. That's right. They're there for the back pain. They don't realize that we could help with headaches or clearer thinking. Or I can't tell you how many times I've heard that, and I know you have too. And every chiropractor has sleeping better. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we've had subjects that have come in for our studies. So all we're recording is a set of things, and they start writing letters to us thanking us for even doing this research project so that they, you know, happen to then get chiropractic care that they wouldn't have normally sought. And all these other things have changed for them.
Yeah.
You know, they suddenly can swallow their food better. These,
right.
you know, chronic headache pains have gone away that they've had for 50 years.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah. But your model, like, exactly can account for all of those.
It explains all these things.
It explains everything.
Because if we change brain function, you could impact pretty much everything.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like the brain controls everything, right?
No. What gives you that idea?
I don't know.
Maybe 100 years of neuroscience.
That's right. So,
research.
Dr. Havoc, where do you see your research going in the next 5 to 10 years? And I know you have... from what you explained, probably hundreds of studies in your mind what you want to do. And if we can get some research funding going your way, we'll do that. We'll give people maybe a chance to figure out where you're at the end of the call and how they may be able to contribute to that. But what do you want to see?
Well, there's many avenues. I want to continue to understand better and more how an adjustment actually works, how it helps improve function, why it, you know, raises quality of life. We've shown that in studies over and over, and I want to understand how and why. I'm really driven by understanding that. But there's other lines of research that we're really interested in as well. We're looking now also at more clinical outcomes that we correlate with the functional outcomes. So looking at kids with ADHD, looking at their brain changes as well as their clinical outcomes. So, you know, with and without chiropractic care, looking at kids with autism, looking at the elderly, looking at prevention of falls risk. There's so many sensory motor integrative functions that we obviously now know we impact that are very, very important for the elderly population in relation to falls, in relation to their ability to carry out normal daily activities of living, to be able to live independently and stay out of hospitals and becoming institutionalized. We're really, really interested in looking at, can we identify brain markers, objective brain markers, where we can see people that are developing problems? Can we nip that in the bud, and can we prevent problems from developing into chronic pain that becomes extremely difficult to then treat and a lifelong problem? We know kids develop pain at an early age, and if they do develop pain at an early age, they are likely to become adults with lifelong pain problems.
Sure.
So this is an area that I'm extremely interested in. Can we nip that in the bud? Can we prevent these people from, you know, having a fall and an accident and, you know, shit happens.
Yeah, for sure.
Can we then prevent them from going on to having a lifetime of, you know, chronic pain problems?
Yeah, I mean,
because
that,
these things come and go to begin with, you know. Can we nip that in the bud? That's
that's
something that really excites me. So I'm working with a team of, you know, medical doctors, neurophysiologists around the world. We collaborate with people in Turkey, in Denmark, in Australia, in Canada, like you mentioned, Bernadette Murphy. where we're looking at, you know, many of these aspects, looking at where spinal dysfunction is starting to develop. We're identifying that they control their arms differently. They perceive where their arm is to be different than it is.
Right.
You know, and we see that we can reverse that with chiropractic care.
Yeah.
So we can take that the step further and start doing prospective studies looking at,
yeah,
well, can we actually prevent them from going on to developing bigger problems.
Right. One of the things also I see is that for the chiropractor, I'm sure it's not too far away, maybe 5, 10, 15 years, the assessment's going to change based upon what you're doing.
Exactly.
I mean, we're going to have maybe tools that the chiropractor can use in office to assess these neuroplastic changes to see the permanency, essentially, of the effect.
Well, I'm also really interested in knowing, is our skill, does that matter? You know, could you do a weekend course in manipulation and expect the same kind of brain changes that a chiropractor who spent, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years studying to become a chiropractor,
right,
you know, before they're let loose on the public, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's other professions that might do a weekend course in manipulation. You know, can we expect the same kind of changes that,
yeah,
you know, that skill, you know, and then even chiropractors, there are many different techniques that chiropractors have, you know, do different techniques, you know, give different neurophysiological responses, you know, or does it not matter too much the kind of technique we use, or
yep,
does it? You know, there's so many things even in that area that I'd really love to explore. You know, how can we do a better service for the public? You know, can we, you know, in certain situations use certain techniques because research shows us that our patients will be better off if we use this technique versus that technique,
yep,
depending on what they present with.
Fascinating.
So there's so much to do.
Optimizing,
we need funding.
Optimizing our control. We need funding.
Yep.
We'll emphasize that again.
Yes, we need funding.
We'll tell people how to do that in just a little bit. So how about some of the pressing issues that you see within the profession? When you look at the profession, you look at your research and what's going on perhaps with other research that's going within chiropractic, what do you see as some of the things that chiropractors need to work on?
Well, I think chiropractors need to join the 21st century and sort of become up to date with this latest science, because it is changing how we understand now chiropractic care to work, right? So
yeah,
it'd be kind of cool if we stop talking about a theory of a bone out of place squashing a nerve, where we kind of know that's in most cases is not the case. I mean, yes, we can have nerve root lesions, and yes, chiropractic care can probably relieve the pressure on those nerves. I've no doubt about that. But
yeah,
the majority of spinal dysfunction that we adjust doesn't have a nerve root lesion component to it. It's much bigger than that.
Yeah.
So it'd be kind of cool if the chiropractic profession would educate themselves as,
yeah,
to what the science is saying. I also see this research that we're doing that I believe it will help build bridges within the profession, because I believe it will explain why some of the clinical research that has been done isn't showing us what chiropractors see in practice.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the thing that chiropractors will see people that have spinal dysfunction, whereas if you do a clinical trial on a certain condition, you would include people that have spinal dysfunction and potentially don't have spinal dysfunction.
Right.
And all of a sudden, in our clinical trials, we're not finding that chiropractic care helps,
yep,
potentially because we're not looking at the subgrouping of that population. We're not,
sure,
finding the people that have that condition that have spinal dysfunction, where there's a dysfunction within the central nervous system causing their symptoms. Does,
right,
does that make sense?
Well, totally.
So I think we're going to build some bridges within the profession. And my other advice to the profession is that we just ignore the loud idiots on either end of the extremes. Because I believe the bulk of us, the majority, 90%, we are very sane, rational beings. We don't randomly manipulate the spine.
Right.
There's a lot of science now that can explain how our care works. We can be,
right,
we can be up to date and wide awake, and
totally,
and we can share this science. We can still honor our technique, but it's no longer just a theory or a philosophy. Chiropractic,
yeah,
it is now. It's got quite a good scientific base behind it as well.
Right,
and we're doing way more research worldwide, not just us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally.
It's expanding big time.
Yeah, it really is exciting stuff. So a goal of this podcast series is to motivate and assist practitioners and students alike to pursue research careers in chiropractic. Can you offer any advice to aspiring chiropractors who may be interested in pursuing research careers?
Yes. Those of you out there that have this inquiring mind, I know you exist. I was one of you. I didn't think I could do it. I didn't think I was smart enough. But if you have that burning desire to understand, to want to explain, to be able to to understand how something works or why it works or if it works in certain situations, please, you know, drop me a line, send me an email. I know many of the scientific community within chiropractic. I know them all around the world. I go to all the scientific conferences if I can. I might be able to hook you up with someone within the area that you're interested in. It's really, really important for our future that we continue to train new scientists. There is so much research that needs to be done that we don't have a fraction of the chiropractic scientists that we need to be able to fully understand how chiropractic works, to be able to serve the public better.
Agreed. On the other hand, we have a lot of good science, the kind of science that you're producing, the kind of science that other people are producing, and chiropractors, unfortunately, just are not aware of the stuff that's already out there.
I know. That's a bit sad.
It is.
Yeah.
We need to work on that. And certainly the population is not, because if the chiropractors aren't aware, the population as a whole is not going to know.
No.
Our administrators and government and whatnot, they're not familiar with this either.
We're actually trying to make it easier for chiropractors and the public to understand the research, to understand the facts. I've established a company now that literally designs little public animations that just talks about what the research tells us about chiropractic. It's a membership that chiropractors can sign up to. Money goes back to us to do more research, which is phenomenal. But it also educates the chiropractor in a very, very easy online way. What is the science saying? And gives you access to a lot of this information. We don't just cover our own research. We talk about studies in general. I know a lot of chiropractors don't want to spend the time searching the literature, critiquing
right.
the literature,
right.
translating it into a language that makes sense to the public.
That's
I understand
right.
that it's a tedious job. Someone like me really enjoys it.
Yeah, yeah.
So my idea was, well, let's exchange. I can help you. You can help me. I can do more work, and I can help you back again.
That's right.
Yeah.
Perfect. I mean, that's exactly what we need. Because as a chiropractor researcher myself, it is difficult getting dollars, and there's no doubt. So how do people contribute to your research funds?
Well, there's different ways they can contribute. If they are chiropractors and they'd like to join this membership, then they get educated. They can use all our public animations. They know it's backed by science. As science changes, I will update what is sent out. We've done a lot of research on how to get the information across in an easy-to-understand language. I think we've achieved that really, really well. They can sign up to that membership. It's at haavikresearch.com. So that's HAAVIK, research, R-E-A-S-E-A-R. I can't spell research.com.
It's been a long day.
It's been a long day. I'm jet-lagged. So they can sign up to it on that research on our website. You can also directly donate money. We get people all around the world, chiropractors all around the world, even members of the public donate directly to our research center in New Zealand. It is a non-for-profit trust, so it's tax deductible from the US over a certain amount. So again, you could just send me an email. You can contact me at any of my websites. There's a contact site. There's a HeidiHaavik.com website as well. Even if you searched for Heidi Chiropractic Research, normally I pop up in Google. So it shouldn't be hard to get in touch with me, and we can leave our contact details with you too.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll put that on the website.
So yeah, direct donations. There's other avenues. There's organizations around the world that literally raise funds for research, not just for our research, but for, you know, spinal research. There's a Australian Spinal Research Foundation in Australia. That's another avenue. They've been very supportive of our work and other really cool research, very relevant to chiropractic practice.
Fantastic. Well, I'd like to wrap up then by just thanking you very much for being on the podcast. It's certainly been a pleasure, and I've learned a lot, and I'm all pumped up now about your research, so this is fantastic. We do have some upcoming podcasts. Next month we'll have Dr. Christine Gertz. So we look forward to
love Christine.
To her talk as well. And I guess that's it. So thanks again so much.
Thanks, Steve. Been
All
a
right.
pleasure.
Bye now.